All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 141. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey, what's up?
And today we wrap up our Friday the 13th series rewatch, which we'll get to in a minute. But first, we both actually got a chance to see a new movie that is available on Netflix. It's called 1922, written and directed by Zach Hilditch. Adapted from the Stephen King novel. And as you may have guessed, the story takes place in 1922. It is about a farmer played by Thomas Jane who basically begins to hate his wife and wants to kill his wife over some land that she inherited, like 100 acres of land. He wants to keep it and add it to his farm. She wants to sell it.
Yeah, and fundamentally, like, change their family. Like, she wants to move to the city and
yes,
get away from farming. Yeah. He does not.
I mean, yeah, he's, you know, says cities are for fools.
Yeah.
He begins to really seriously consider killing his wife and enlisting his, like, teenage son to help him with this. I don't know if you've read the short story, Chris. I can't remember. I know we
discussed this. I have not. I own it. I've not read it.
Yeah, it's a novella. It's about 100 pages long, I think, and I want to say Full Dark No Stars collection.
Mm-hmm.
And I read it. I remember details of it, but some of the details I did not remember. So it was kind of cool going into this and like watching it and going, "Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah!" Like it was coming back to me as it went. I think it's a pretty faithful adaptation. There's been a lot of Stephen King adaptations this year. We've discussed that a bunch, but like, really, take a moment, take stock of it. There's It. There's The Dark Tower. There is, on the smaller screen, you have this. We have Gerald's Game. We have Mr. Mercedes, The Mist. I mean, it's been a crazy year for Stephen King, and I'd say 80% of it has been very successful.
Yeah.
I think this is my favorite of the year. I'm not even joking. Like, it's a smaller, more low-key movie. We have not discussed our thoughts on this beforehand. I'm interested to hear what you have to say about it, but I really enjoyed it. I think why I like it the most, like what I love most about it as well, is just the setting and the tone that it has. It kind of reminds me of a Western, the way that people talk.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of set up that way, like, you know, Midwest, Nebraska.
Yeah, although my coworker says he sounds like he's from Louisiana. But yeah, that's probably my second favorite thing about this is Thomas Jane, which I did not even realize it was him from the trailer. I thought it was someone that looked like him. I think he gives a great performance. I think he's really good in it. I think everyone's really good in it, but it's basically him and his son for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What'd you think of it, man?
I liked it. I don't think it's my favorite, Stephen King piece that I've seen this year, but I thought it was really good. It has this nice slow pace to it. You know, you kind of see the hatred and then the falling apart between Wilfred and Arlette as he sees that he's not going to get his way, and he decides there's only one way to do this, and he kind of convinces his son to join in. And then you see the slow descent as he loses everything over the course of the year.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting, though, how, like, yeah, it's a slower-paced movie, but, like, when you think about it in terms of time, like, things fall apart for him pretty quickly after he makes his mistake. I mean, I don't want to spoil it too much or anything. I do think it's like, it feels like a smaller story. It almost feels like a short story, I think, or something. Like, I think that's the only thing that's holding it back for me from being like a 5 is that it's not like It or anything. Like, it's a smaller story about a guy on a farm who makes some horrible mistakes and lives to regret them. I think it's like a really dark, like, it kind of gets under your skin a little bit as it goes along. And I don't know. I just like where it goes once it gets going, too. Like, I liked the fates of everyone in it. I'm not a huge fan of like the final shot or whatever, but it's whatever. It's fine.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the like what are you gonna do?
Yeah, people get mad at endings. I'm at the point now where if an ending like blows me away, it's like an extra cherry on top. Like, cool, thank you, but I'm fully fine with enjoying the ride along the way. You know,
yeah. Endings are hard.
Yeah, it is, and you know, there's only a couple ways that this ending would have went, and the way they chose is fine by me. But I do like everything that happens to him like up until that point. Doesn't have like a big like memorable scene. I don't think like Gerald's Game, which I think, you know, Gerald's Game will be remembered for its gory scene. But this is like a slow little creeper of a horror movie, and I liked it quite a bit.
I think the murderer is pretty. It's not. Yeah, it's not gory like in Gerald's Game, but it's a. You know, it's this very emotional scene where.
Yeah, it's shocking,
like,
for sure.
Yeah, because it's like, oh, it's not going to take that long, and then it takes a whole lot longer than maybe it should.
Yeah, but like, they do a lot of fast cuts too while it's happening. Yeah. If they would have just like sat a camera in the room, like and did like showed that, like, yeah, it's pretty nasty. But yeah, I can't really say more without like spoiling it. Other than really enjoyed. I thought Thomas Jane is greatness. I love the setting and the tone. Like,
strong performances all around. Yeah,
yeah, and I think if you're into like, I think if you're into westerns or like just, I don't know. It's like one of my favorite things about Game of Thrones is the way people talk. You know, people have a very particular way of talking in this. It's old, you know, old. I guess Midwest. I think it's pretty cool. I gave it a 4.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's a 4 for me too.
Yeah, it's on Netflix. Give it a watch. Yep. I honestly do think this is like, I think it's a better movie than Gerald's Game. So, all right, Chris, you ready for this?
I guess.
We're going now into the final two. Freddy vs. Jason and Friday the 13th, 2009.
Yeah.
And I said I would let you take the lead for this episode, partially because I watched these like over a week and a half ago now, so yeah. Not quite as fresh in my memory. Tell us.
Do you want to – I guess I got them right here anyway. So Freddy vs. Jason came out August 2003. Budget around $30 million, and it ended up grossing about $82 million in the U.S. So it's pretty successful. In fact, if I remember correctly, it may be the most successful out of either series. I think I did read that.
Absolutely. If you just keep tracking our head as we go along, I mean, I'm looking at box office, and this is probably worldwide of 114.
Yeah,
it's the biggest budget of the series overall, and it's the biggest box office of the series overall. I mean, it is taking in two different huge franchises. And one last thing I want to get in before we, you know, you start to dig in is it's directed by Ronnie Yu,
yep.
Who is kind of important because he's like a big Asian director who started to become a big like horror director here. It seemed like he was going to be anyways for a little bit. He did Bride of Chucky, and then he did this, and then I've not seen much from him since. But
yeah, in fact, he hasn't like he's done two films since this movie, and one episode of TV.
But before kind of becoming a hit in the US, he was like, he's been around for decades. He's been around since the 70s, dozens of movies. I had no idea that until I looked into it.
Yeah, and I mean, this was pretty successful, so it's weird, right? Like, that he kind of just fell off, so maybe he made some sort of career change or something after that where he kind of got out of like, actively writing and directing stuff. I don't know. But
yeah.
Yeah, Ronnie Yu directed it, a Hong Kong director. It's very evident in maybe the last half hour of this film. Actually, it's very evident all the way through. because So, as the name implies, Freddy versus Jason. This stars Freddy Krueger, played by Robert Englund, and Jason Voorhees, where they've switched him up. He is played by Ken Kersinger this time around. It takes place sometime after Jason goes to hell and before Jason X. Way before Jason X. Freddy has somewhere in the last few years, he has lost his power to hurt people via dreams. He's been forgotten. So he goes and he gets Jason to come back to life because Jason is physical. And he gets him to leave hell and go and start traumatizing people on Elm Street.
So that like their fear could grow.
And yeah.
That would feed into Freddy's power.
So, yeah, so that they could fear it and so that people would start saying his name again and remember him, which is if he's remembered, they'll be afraid of him. His power grows, he can then start killing people again.
It's not quite as like convoluted as you might expect. It's pretty simple and straightforward. Freddy's using Jason as this little errand boy to gain his strength back. Like I
physical conduit.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into our feelings on this, but I do kind of appreciate the fact that they somehow were able to come up with an idea that like kind of is like simple and makes sense.
Yeah, it doesn't suck either. Like the premise doesn't suck. Yeah.
It's an excuse to get these two together somehow.
Yeah, you know? Like and that's all you need. Like that's really all you need to do because ultimately what you want to see is Freddy fight Jason.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's like an hour and a half, and the first hour of that is total bullshit where Freddy doesn't do much of anything. And Jason is kind of, he's a little bit neutered in this movie. Like, he has a lot of kills, but they are not anywhere near as creative or engaging or and entertaining as they are in even Jason X or Jason Goes to Hell.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. I would agree. I mean, to me, it's weird because even though, like, Jason, I guess, is doing a lot of the action throughout most of it, it feels like a bad, like, Nightmare on Elm Street movie to me, kind of.
And
it kind of is. It's kind of Freddy's story. That's
on
purpose,
right? Like, it's Freddy's story. It's taking place on Elm Street. Like, you know, two-thirds of this movie does not take – two-thirds of this movie takes place in Ohio, where Freddy is – home based at, and then like the final third takes place at Crystal Lake. So they're not together, like they're not close. It's just something maybe I'll bring up in a little bit, but Jason kind of goes back to the original house. I can't remember the address, but it's the first 14... house.
This will not surprise you that I remember the address. 1428 Elm.
Yeah, 1428. It's the house where the original movie took place, and like it's kind of the iconic location.
Yeah, where Nancy lived.
Yeah. Somebody's living there again, and Jason shows up. It's like teenage kids hanging out. And Jason starts kind of picking some of them off. He only picks off one, actually, I believe, early on, which is it's a pretty good kill. He stabs this douchebag Trey.
He like stabs the fuck out of him while he's laying face down in bed, and then
multiple
he folds
times.
The bed.
And then he folds the bed up, which calls back to like.
Part 6.
Yeah, part 6 and where you know he's folding guys up. Like it's a nice callback. But yeah. And then he kind of like is off, like all the kids escape after that, and then it's like 20 minutes before anything else happens. It takes a while, and even then, like Jason, he kills two more people, but one is an off-screen kill, and the other one is, it's like it fades off-screen, so we don't actually see anything. We just see blood splatter. So somehow, then, like everybody ends up at a party. And these two dudes that are in a mental hospital, like, oh no, Freddy's back, Freddy's back, and they might be the most likable characters in the film.
Yeah, I think that the one guy in particular, I think he's a pretty good actor. I can't remember.
Jason Ritter or the other one?
I think the other one.
The one that gets burned to death?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah, I think it's Brendan Fletcher, who plays Mark.
I kind of liked him. I thought he was like a good actor.
Yeah, they're pretty good. Actually, the two of them work pretty well. Much better than, you know, the other douchebags that are in the film. And even the girls, they're not really all that entertaining. They're okay. Like
the kids have some funny lines when they're hanging out in the house before he whacks the guy in the bed. Like,
yeah,
it's like cringeworthy almost dialogue, but
yeah,
like,
it's
kind of funny.
It's not like 1980s dialogue, like, which is what you get from most of the series. But it is definitely like early 2000s, like kids hanging out dialogue. And it's a bit cringeworthy. they go for a little bit of star power here. They have Kelly Rowland, and as Kia, she of, I believe she's from Destiny's Child.
Yep.
One of the three members of Destiny's Child, one of the two not named Beyonce. it's a bunch of like bullshit scenes strung together, where Jason is killing large amounts of kids, but very quickly, very off screen. There's a cool scene where Freddy is starting to get his power back, and he is torturing this girl Gib, and he's about to go in for the kill, and Jason kills her in the real world. Mm-hmm. And she disappears right from there. But like the overall premise of it is, like, you know, Freddy's trying to get back to power, and he loses control of his pet in Jason. So then that's what sets up the fight. Like, Freddy's now pissed off. Like, Jason, you're killing everybody. Like, I just wanted you to kind of get me back to power and then go back on your way, go back to hell. But Jason's a killing machine. He's just out there wrecking shit.
Yeah, he goes to a kegger in a cornfield.
Yeah, he kills a bunch of people there. There's a really cool scene where Jason's on fire.
Yeah, this dude throws some Everclear on him, yeah. And yeah, lights Jason on fire.
It seems like the whole movie is a bunch of set pieces. Right, like, so there's the house, there's the 1428 Elm Street house, and then there is the kegger, and then there's the insane asylum, and there's Camp Crystal Lake. Like, it's not necessarily that they all flow together. It's that, like, they kind of put these areas where there's going to be these big set pieces.
Yeah, like, isn't there, like, there's a part where, like, a dude smokes a joint by himself? Like, he, like, separates himself from the whole group.
Yep.
For some reason, and he like gets high, and he sees like a caterpillar Freddy or whatever.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
Like, okay, I found my note on this. Yeah, stoner guy gets high by himself. Caterpillar Freddy gets him. Freddy possesses him. But like, I remember thinking at that part, it's like, dude, in the Nightmare on Elm Street series, like the early ones, like the kids were taking like no-dos and drinking pots of coffee to try to stay awake, and like. Yeah. When they fell asleep, it made sense that they could fall asleep in the middle of a scene, because they're like, but here it's like, this dude is like completely fine, and I'm sorry, I've smoked plenty of pot in my life. Just because I smoke a joint doesn't mean I'm falling asleep in the middle of, like, especially knowing if I fall asleep I'm gonna get killed. There's a lot of like people randomly falling asleep on this. Sorry, this is just a little thing that bugged me.
Well, it is. It's because it's like that's where Freddy has his power. Like he doesn't have it in the real world, so he has to pull you into the dream world, and it's like, well, there's no real reason for these kids to be asleep. So, like, and we're not going to establish that, like, tired. Like, this is all happening over the course of a day. Like, or it seems that way, right? Like
yeah.
Everything that happens from the cornfield rave all seems to happen in, like, one day. Like,
yeah.
But like, the main character, she dozes off on a fucking couch just so they can give us some exposition. Like,
isn't that in the middle of the scene where they're sitting there planning and there's like all these really stupid lines where she's like, Freddy's weakness is fire and Jason's is water.
Freddy burned in fire. Jason drowned in water. Those are their weaknesses. And it's like, no, they're not. Like, I don't know if you've seen any of the Friday the 13th movies, but Jason's always in water. Like, in fact, he swam to a fucking boat and climbed up the anchor, and Jason takes Manhattan. Like,
it's, you know, it's not their weaknesses; it's how they supposedly died when they were human. Like, I don't know. I mean,
they play off of that too, though, because like, there's a fight. And it's a pretty cool fight where Freddy and Jason are going at it in a boiler room. And like this water, for whatever reason, like a sprinkler goes off and Jason all of a sudden freezes and he can't go through the water. Like, what?
Yeah, it's a dumb, like, I get what they're like going for, but it's dumb. Like, it's, well,
because and I really do think that it's because, I mean, these films are like, there's like seven Nightmare on Elm Street films and way more Friday the 13th movies. None of this has ever been established as a way to harm these people. So why would you introduce that now? Like, it's really, really dumb. And there's just so much like, hey, early 2000s bullshit. Like the guy you're talking about who dozed off and he gets possessed by Caterpillar Freddy. Like, he's a straight up like J Muse ripoff, right? Like,
oh yeah, I have a note about that here somewhere. I said, where the fuck did I have that? Wannabe Jason Muse looking motherfucker. That was my note.
Yeah, like even his like vocal tics are like straight out of like,
and he's nowhere near as good as the real Muse.
No, it's like if you wanted to go for that, why didn't you just ask Jason Muse?
Muse would have done it. You just had to pay him, I'm sure, not a ton, you know, pay him like what, you know, the role required, and he would have
probably done it. Way less than whatever you paid Kelly Rowland to yell like homophobic slurs.
Oh yeah, and that is also a part of the movie that I thought stuck out pretty bad.
That there's two pieces of that one scene is Robert Englund as Freddy Krueger, and Freddy's always been known for like some dark offbeat humor, but when Kelly Rowland like steps into she's gonna be play the hero here and distract Freddy, she steps in and he turns and he says dark meat.
Oh yeah!
Like, wow,
that stuck out real bad too.
Wow! And then, like, and a minute later, like she's like using homophobic slurs at Freddy, and it's like, wow, this would not pass muster today. But it's funny because it doesn't fit. Like, to me, it doesn't even fit in. Like, I don't think something like this would stand out to me in the older movies, the movies from the 80s. Like,
I guess, you know what, I do remember, because I saw this in the theater, I do remember when she says that line where she drops the F-bomb on him, that I dug it back in the day, because it was like, she was just talking mad shit to him, like, come on, motherfucker! But, like, today, it just does not land. Like, it sticks out, like, ooh, like...
Yeah. It didn't, like, and I think I'm with you, like, you know, when I saw this 14 years ago, I probably laughed at both of those lines, like...
Yeah, and Although even 14 years ago, I thought she was terrible in this, and I think she's awesome. I hope they didn't pay her much, but she's the worst thing. I think one of the worst things about this movie, she's so bad in it. She's such a wooden actor.
Yeah, she is atrocious in this movie, and they give her way too much to work with because she is one of the she's one of the best friends of the main character, and she's one of the final people that survives. Like, I think she's one of the final three, outside of Freddy and Jason. So it's bad. Like, that, she's really, really bad in it.
There's also, I have in my notes, there is a there's a weird subplot that I don't entirely remember the details of, but one of the kids tells Lori, I don't remember which one, tells Lori, and that's the main character, that her dad killed her mom instead of her mom dying in a car accident, which I was like, what? Like, how would you know that, for one? But then there's this whole backstory about, one, there's this drug that the kids from the mental hospital are on called Hypnosol.
Yeah.
Which I think keeps them from dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, they mentioned somewhere, that her dad is, in charge of that fucking shit, at that mental hospital. And, he's been experimenting or something on kids. I don't know. I don't remember 100%, but I have notes about it where I'm like, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that, is introduced and just does not make sense or fit. That whole thing, though, where, Will is kind of explaining to Lori that, oh, well, your dad's the one that put me away, and that's why you haven't seen me in, 4 years.
Okay.
And he killed your mom. She didn't die in a car accident, but it turns out Freddy killed her, and it's so fucking weird. And then it just turns around on that, and it's like, oh, yeah, and he's also the doctor that's in charge of this, crazy house.
Yeah, it's like, is he good? Is he bad? What's the story with this? You know what I mean? I don't know. It's like,
and it's like, the movie just does not. It's too. I'm gonna say it's too short, right? Because they stuff so much bullshit in there, but they never actually explain it. So it's like it could have used with maybe a little bit more explanation of what the parents are doing, and because they all seem like they're in on it, but oh fuck, Freddy's around because there's this cop Stubbs that is just in from town, but he's new, and all the other cops kind of know about Freddy. It's like, shh, kids can't know about him. And Stubbs who are you talking about? but they don't explain it, and they just jump from piece to piece. So then it just kind of becomes the kill show, right? And I think the kills are weak throughout most of this film. The only thing that I personally think works is the Freddy versus Jason fight at the end. And even that's a little weird. It's a
it's
little,
all right.
Yeah,
it's all right. Just a few other random notes I wanted to get to before we get to that. Cause that is the end. One thing I wrote is Freddy is a real sexual creep in this.
Oh, very much so.
For one, that one line, which is racist as well, kind of how sweet dark meat. There's a part with him fucking a corpse.
Yeah. Really
fucking weird.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been a sexual creep. They did really
play it up. They really play it up, and it's weird.
The part when they're bringing Jason to Crystal Lake, so they could have this showdown on his home turf. The way these kids just the leaps of logic are crazy. But they're yeah, we're bringing Jason to his home turf. They tranquilize Jason and put him in the back of the van. Which is just such an odd image to see Jason just laying there next to a bunch of people he wants to kill.
Right.
But also giving CPR to Jason.
Oh my god!
Is,
yeah,
stupid and gross. It's just disgusting.
And there's they're in the back, and it's a Kia Kelly Rowland's character, and then this other dorky kid, as Jason is drowning in the back of this van, and then they're like arguing over who's going to give him CPR, and like the dorky kid's like, "Well, I have asthma." And she like, "Well, he has asthma. He can't do it." Like, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, and it's just, oh god, it's gross. Like, you know, it looks like she's giving CPR to like a rotted corpse.
Yeah,
I do like the look of Jason in this kind of. He looks like he's rotting, like his skin is all black. You know.
Yeah.
Even when he has his mask on, I just kind of like that look. Although I do think they've topped it in the one following this, probably. But, anyways, go ahead.
Yeah, it's, you know, they end up at Crystal Lake, and Jason wakes up, and so does Lori, who has gone into a dream state to bring Freddy out, because she evidently has the power to pull stuff out of the dream world into reality. And she pulls Freddy into real life, and that's where Jason and Freddy go at it for like the next 20 minutes. Which
it's
is
kind of, it's kinda okay. Cartoony. It's like cartoony. Yeah. Like it's like watching a cartoon fight, but it's like, I mean, this is what you bought the ticket for essentially. And it's kind of fun.
And it's, there's a lot of wire work, which is something that you could definitely see Ronnie use influence on. Another thing you can see his influence on is, for whatever reason, he loves sending characters flying across the screen after they've been hit by Jason. Like, it's kind of absurd. Although I will say Kelly Rowland's her death is amazing when like Jason hits her with the machete and she flies into a tree.
Like, yep,
awesome. But yeah, every other instance is pretty absurd. Yeah, there's some cool scenes where like Freddy drops a bunch of like rods on the Jason, and there's like the whole missile thing.
Yes.
where he's like firing off these like you know, gas tanks at Jason, and Jason's like moving around. They're like land torpedoes or whatever.
Doesn't Jason take him and like run him across a whole bunch of windows? Like, that's really cool.
Right at the beginning, he gets the best of Freddy, and he like takes him through like the windows on one of the cabins and just runs him across the whole thing, destroying everything in its wake. And then there, you know, it was a pretty good fight on the dock. he ends up Jason somehow gets overtaken, and Freddy ends up with the machete and starts wailing on him. But ultimately, Jason ends up, you know, kind of winning, stuffing Freddy with his own knives, like, which is a pretty cool shot as well.
So you're calling it for Jason?
Yeah, I think Jason wins that.
I think Jason wins too. I think I'm a little biased because Jason's my boy in this fight. Like, now you throw Michael Myers in that fight, I'm gonna want.
Oh, yeah, I want Michael to win that.
But yeah, Jason's my boy in this fight. I think they kind, you know, they do it the way you would expect, where it's like, oh, you can kind of read it both ways. Like, you get to kind of be the judge. I think.
I guess, but I mean, there is like the whole final scene. Like, I mean, Freddy does give a wink, but Jason is walking with his decapitated head. Like, that's a win. Like,
yeah, but then don't give him the wink. You know, they're trying to...
Yeah, like, ways, I'm not really dead.
I remember loving this movie when it came out. I think part of me was just amazed that they somehow did it and it made sense and it was, like, entertaining. Like,
yeah.
But yeah, now, all these years later, and, like... Going into this rewatch, I thought this was going to still be one of my favorite ones, despite the fact that I had heard, like, We Hate Movies, trash it. I was like, ah, fuck them, they're wrong. But then I'm rewatching this, and it's like, this movie, it has a budget that we have not yet seen in the series. It's slick. It's glossy. Like, very, you know, I guess technically well-made, but, like, to me, it's not very good at all. It's kind of like soulless and pointless. Ultimately, I don't know. Like you said, not a lot of interesting kills. Like, it's not very cohesive. It's jumping from set piece to set piece.
Yeah, it's all over the place.
I don't think it's aged well.
Yeah, I don't think it's a good movie at all. Like, I was really surprised, much like you. Like, I was like, oh, this is going to be a fun one. Like Jason X, like, kind of knew it was stupid. But no, Jason X knew it was stupid. This one doesn't really seem to realize that it's dumb. Like, I mean, and some of that's just, like, the earnest performances of, like, Kelly Rowland and some of the other actors and, like, the guy who plays Freeburg, who's, like, the Jason Mewes wannabe. Like, it's like nothing works quite as well as it should.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, which I like that series. You know, I'm not saying, maybe one day we'll do it. But, like, I don't like it as much as Friday the 13th. So, it feels like a bad Nightmare on Elm Street. With Jason thrown in and a whole lot of cheese.
I mean, what I would compare it to is, like, it's Nightmare on Elm Street fan fiction, right? Like,
right, yeah.
Like, that's what it feels like, but it's like Nightmare on Elm Street fan fiction that somebody gave a budget to and allowed them to make a movie. And it's like, it just doesn't work, like. And maybe some of that is like Freddy and Jason shouldn't exist in the same thing, right? Like they're very different types of movies. Like they're very similar movies, but they're very different tonally.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the Topps comic that was back in the 90s that I used to have, which was Jason and Leatherface. You didn't happen to catch that comic in the 90s, did you?
No.
That actually worked pretty well.
But I could see that working better than, like Freddy has a personality, right? Like,
well, I'm just saying, like kind of what you're speaking to is, like, I think Texas Chainsaw and Friday the 13th are way closer franchises than what these two are. But the least of the problems is how they figured out how to meld it together. For me, it's just not a great movie. Like, it's,
yeah, more of that than anything. Like, the acting is bad, and that's not to say that the acting in this series has ever been great, but it stands out against the glossiness of it.
Yeah, this is a modern film now, right? Like, and it has a $30 million budget and it has some actors in it. Like, like you were trying to say, like, back in the day, if you had decent actors at all, it was like, cool, great. Like, you know, part four, we got Crispin Glover before anyone knew who he was. Like, now, like you said, against the gloss and the budget of this, like, it stands out more. It's just like, this is shitty.
It's a bad movie.
Yeah. I guess that kind of sums it up.
What's your favorite kill from this, Jeff?
By far was Kelly Rowland getting fucked.
Okay.
Flying into that goddamn tree. Like, oh my God. Like, my favorite kill before then was, I think it was like the stoner dude getting cut in half with the machete. I was like, all right, okay, maybe this one. But then because I wanted her to get it so good. Like, and it was fucking hilarious when he hits her. Like,
yeah.
And she just goes flying. So absolutely her getting killed.
That's cool. I enjoy, Trey being stabbed over and over again and then folded up in the bed.
Yeah, the callback. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that early on, I thought that was going to be it as well.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Kelly Rowland, that's fucking great.
And I think for me, like, that really, like, that was the high point of the kills for me. And, like, I mean,
that's,
I did
the first kill.
Yeah, it's the first kill. Like, and I did enjoy Kelly Rowland being, like, splatted across a tree. Like, that was pretty fantastic.
Because she flies, like, 40 feet.
That's, yeah, it's ridiculous. So absurd. But it's, like, for me, like, that's, like, all right, like, in the first 10 minutes of the movie, like, you hit your high point and kills. And as you said, when we started this endeavor, like, these are kind of like musicals, right? Like, so none of the songs after that were any good for me. Like, there was like a okay one with Kelly Rowland, but nothing else. So
true. Yeah.
Favorite girl.
Oh, this is easy for me, and that's the main girl, Lori, played by Monica Keena. Okay, back when this movie came out, I had the hugest boner ever for her. Like, I was, like, in love with this chick. She was in some movie called Crime and Punishment in Suburbia, I think, before this that I'd seen her in. She was on the cover of Maxim 1 month.
Okay.
And I still, like, when I watch it now, I'm like, she's very hot. Like, she just looks short and, like, stacked. And I was very pleased. I thought she was going to become a huge star. It did not really happen. I haven't really seen her in anything recently that I've noticed, anyways. But, yeah, it would be Monica Keena for sure.
Cool. I like the girl that played Gib, Catherine Isabel. She's been in a couple other, like, horror films, like Ginger Snaps and American Mary. She's nothing really big.
Was she the smoker?
Yeah, she was. Yeah, she was the one that, like, she's kind of like the abused one from Trey. Like, she's like, hey, babe, like, I don't want
to cuddle when I'm done.
Yeah. don't make me repeat myself.
Yeah, I can see that. Like, I definitely, like, if Monica Keena was not in this, I'd probably be gravitating towards her as well.
Cool. What's your rating?
It's a 2.
I'm going lower on this. It's a 1 for me.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought? We both went into this again. This was one of the better ones, I thought, anyways.
Yeah.
It's not. It's one of the worst. It's watchable. I'll give it this. It's watchable. I'd watch it over 5.
But, okay.
I would not watch it over many of the other ones. And one interesting thing to note about this before we move on is the writers of this, they were fans of the series, and they went on to write the movie we're about to talk about, which I think speaks to the power of a director, because all the bad things in this are kind of in, I think, the remake that we're about to talk about. But I think the director elevates the horror of what's going on well above what's in this.
Yeah, so what we're going to talk about next is Friday the 13th, 2009. I guess that's the best way to refer to this, right? Like, it's a reboot. It's not really a remake, but it is a reboot of the series. Directed by Marcus Nispel, who he did the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake with Jessica Biel, which both Jeff and I really enjoy.
Yes.
I think that's a fantastic horror film.
He did, I want to say, I'm saying this off the top of my head, so correct me if I'm wrong, I want to say he did The Hills Have Eyes as well.
I don't...
Oh, no, it was that Aha.
So. Yeah, that's Alexander Aha. He did Pathfinder, Conan, he did a bunch of, like, video, like, movies before he did Pathfinder.
Okay, I apologize. I mix those two guys up sometimes, and it's partially because, like, I find them a little similar, but, like, they're both, like, very intense directors,
yeah.
Like, horror directors.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But, yeah, Nispel directed it. Budget was about $19 million, $20 million. And it made $65 million in the U.S. I don't have the worldwide.
International or overall, it made $92.7 million. So, like, it made it, besides Freddy versus Jason, if we're talking pure Friday the 13th, it's the most successful one in the series.
Yeah. So, very successful film that reboots Friday the 13th. And, like, when I say it reboots Friday the 13th, like, this movie kind of kicks off with, starting at the very beginning with Jason's mom going on a killing spree. Like, it's very condensed. Like, they take Friday the 13th part 1 and really condense it down.
Like opening credits, it's kind of showing the confrontation between the mom and what's her name, Alice, I think.
Yeah, at the end. And, like, Alice beheads, Pamela Voorhees. Jason sees this from the woods. Like, they give that perspective. And then what we get is kind of a mix of Friday the 13th Part 2 and Part 3, where, you know, Jason's wearing, like, they're you know, two different versions of Jason here. One is where he's wearing the kind of potato sack on his head, and then the classic hockey mask.
And you got I think a little bit of a final chapter in here because you have the guy looking for his sister as like a main plot element. So it's essentially 1 through 4, but made into one movie. Which you know there's probably about enough plot in 1 through 4 for one movie. So
and
it's fine.
And what you notice immediately, I think, in this movie is how intense it is. Like, immediately once they get to camp, it turns up. Like, once Jason starts the killing, like, it is not like kind of the fun, oh, what's the next kill going to be? Like, this is a scary Friday the 13th movie.
Jason is finally
scary.
It's actually scary. Like, it's actually terrifying and very intense horror, and it sets the tone right off the bat. I mean, he's doing crazy shit. Like, they bring back the sleeping bag kill,
and it is
instead of being comical, like, in every time it's been in the series, even in the first time it was done, was comical. Here, he takes the girl inside the sleeping bag, ties it up above a fire, and
basically it's horrifying. Her alive,
yeah, like, it's horrifying. You hear her screaming and shaking. See the bag shaking.
And they give a like inside look every once in a while, and like you see the terror on her face as it's happening, and it's a really testament to her. Like, she delivers on that. Like, she plays like the horror up. Like, often in these films, like, these girls, especially in the early movies, like, it's like, they're running, and it's like, it's very 80s.
Or they'll stand and pause and scream, and hold their hands out.
Right. It's like, and they kind of like do like the, oh my God, what's going on? Like, this chick looks like she is terrified. She looks like she is trapped. She looks like she is being roasted to death, just like she is on screen. And you see the helplessness of her boyfriend as he has been hit by a bear trap and his leg is trapped. He can't move.
Uh-huh. And
he's watching his girlfriend roast, like, you know, 50 yards away. It's
scary. Like, it's one of the scarier scenes I can think of in a horror movie. Like,
yeah,
the bear trapping use on him, the girl, like, and it's like real and raw, and it feels like this mountain man out in the fucking woods is doing this, and I'm like, which is what it was back at the beginning, you know?
Yeah, and it is immediately unsettling. It is the feeling of unsettling that, like, I got when I originally watched, like, the first 3 and 4 movies of this series back when I was a kid. But
yes,
it is transferred
exactly,
to now. Like, watching it now, like, watching those now, it's like, whatever. Like, it's kind of fun. Like, these are goofy. Like, watching Mark go down the you know, the stairs
with
the machete in his face. Like, it's stupid. And, like, you can see, like, oh, it was really low budget at the time. But, like, watching it as a kid, like, it's horrifying.
It was spooky and horrifying. And that's what this is.
Yeah.
They nailed the horror in this in a way that the series had not done, other than in the imaginations of our youth. You know,
like, He perfectly captures the nostalgia that I had for the series and brings it forward to now, to the present day. And it makes Friday the 13th a scary series again. Since, like, the last seven films maybe have been jokes.
Yeah, and it's a perfect starting point for us to talk about this. And I think part of that nostalgia becomes one of the only crutches of the film as well. But let's take a quick break and we'll start to really dig into this one when we come back. I got pissed.
All right.
But I don't know if you know what my crutch is going to be, but it's that, like, the people are assholes in it and, like,
sure,
really corny. Anyways, be right back.
Yep.
Hello.
Yo.
Okay. I'm back.
All right. So yeah, Friday the 13th, we kind of kicked off with the kind of prologue for this movie, and then it kind of sets up standard format for a Friday the 13th movie. Kids are going to the lake.
Yeah.
There's a group of them going to a lake, and you know, they're going to ultimately end up being murdered and slaughtered by Jason.
They're there to, like, get pot, I think. Right? Like, there's, like, a...
Well, so those are the ones that they're the ones that go camping, and get killed. That's where all these
horrifying scenes happen.
Yeah, that's where everything kind of like those people go out. There's a couple of them looking for pot in the woods. The rest of them are just kind of there to, you know, have a good time. Whitney, she ends up. I guess her and her boyfriend end up exploring Camp Crystal Lake. They stumble across Jason's house or something, where his bed is. And they also stumble across the shrine, a throwback to part two, Friday the 13th, part two, where Jason's mom's head is. And Jason then kind of comes through and, like, a. For whatever reason, he takes Whitney hostage, and everybody else kind of goes missing.
Yeah, and what I love about the opening of this movie is you kind of feel like you've seen an entire Friday the 13th movie by the time it's like 20 minutes in.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that, like, this is just the setup for the rest of the movie. Like, this is like the cold open. You don't see the title card that says Friday the 13th until 24 minutes in.
Yeah, it's a long way.
You basically get to see a Friday the 13th movie where he murders everybody, and then it says Friday the 13th. And then we're introduced to our actual cast.
Yeah,
which that's my favorite part about the movie.
Because, yeah, there's these five campers, which is, you know, a pretty standard for a Friday the 13th movie. And they are either all murdered or one of the girls... we believe has maybe been murdered. We don't really know until later her fate, but she goes missing. Her brother, Clay, is out kind of like looking for her. I believe it's like 6 weeks later. It's not very long later after the events happen at the campground. And he's looking for her, and then there's a group of you know, college kids, jerky dudes, and their stupid girlfriends that are going to this rich guy's lake house or his parents' lake house, and they're the cast. They're the counselors here. There's no real counselors, but they're the ones. They're the partiers. They're the ones that are going to have premarital sex and smoke pot and ultimately be killed by Jason. But all through that is there's this underlying story of you know, Clay looking for his sister Whitney. And, you know, they're going to stumble across Jason involved here. So.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. Like, I think that beyond the fact that it has that really awesome opening, which I still can't get over, like, I like what happens in this movie, except I don't like these kids at all. Like you said, the rich asshole, like, they're all fucking kind of dicks and annoying. Like, what I have a note here. It says, can we do young people hanging out and drinking, but not make them complete cartoons? Like, maybe make them nice, normal people you might actually care about, and then horrible things happen to them, and you feel actually bad about it.
Yeah, and I think some of that is like we're not actually given a chance to see some of them because I think Chewy and I'm trying to think of who the other guy is.
The two guys that chill together, like, are getting really fucked up.
Yeah, Chewie is like the Asian kid,
I like him.
Lawrence, Chewie and Lawrence, like, they're just kind of like, they're just chill dudes, like, just there to like party and hang out. Like, they have no real chips in the game other than to get drunk and stoned on the weekend, but you're not given any real, like, they're kind of like the comedic relief here. So most of it is like relayed on this guy Trent, which is his house, and he's a dick.
Like, yeah, he's a dick. I don't know, like, I just, all together, even, was his name Chewie, you said?
Yeah, he's the Asian kid.
He's likable enough, but, like, I'm just saying, imagine if we did one of these movies where, like, they're not all caricatures, they're not all stereotypes. Right. Like, even he is kind of like a stereotype, like, oh, he's a stoner kid.
He's the stoner kid. He's the Asian stereotype. Alcoholic. He can fix things. Like,
yeah.
You know, Lawrence plays the typical black stoner guy. Like, yeah, there's nothing outside. Like, they're all basically
like, you're right. Like, you know what I like about the Blair Witch Project is the kids in that. Despite some people say like the acting is not good, I disagree. The kids in that feel like real college kids, and they're just normal. Like, and yeah, they're smoking pot and they're drinking and stuff, but they're also just normal, and they start to get scared, and it makes you more scared for them because they feel like real people. And I think, like, one thing that bugs me about watching this remake this time is it really stuck out to me, like, how cartoonish these characters are. Mm-hmm. And what I think it is the screenwriters, who are huge fans of Friday the 13th, this whole movie is an homage to the series. I think done a lot better in many ways, but I think that's one thing that like holds them back is they decide they're like, oh, we have to do like the stereotype teenage characters. Like, there's got to be the stoners, and there's got to be the asshole, and they all got to kind of be over the top, and like these cartoon characters. And I think like the horror is so much stronger that like director Marcus Nispel brings to this that like I think it drags it down a little bit. I'm like, if I'm being honest, like. It really stuck out to me this time, and it has not, like, any other time I watched this movie, I've always been like, this is great. And, like, this time I'm like, I hate these people. And, like, why can't they just be, like, likable characters? So, end of rant, but...
Right.
I think it's a real missed opportunity.
Yeah, and it's been a long time since there's been any likable characters, I think, in the series. So it would have been nice if there was a couple. I don't mind Clay or Jenna. Clay's the brother of Whitney, who's looking for his sister.
They're just bland and generic, though. Yeah. Like, imagine if they were just like they felt like real people. Like, I don't
right.
know. Like,
and none of them do. You're right. Like I don't hate them, but just about everybody else in the movie is like,
yeah,
like Trent and Bree. Like, you want them to die. And then, like Chelsea and I think it's like Mike or whatever. They're the ones that go out on the boat. Like, they're nobodies. Like, they're not given anything to work with. You don't know who they are. You don't care who they are. Like, you're really just like, oh, well, they're gonna die. That's cool. Like,
yeah. Sorry. One last note that I that relates to my rant. As I said, they really go out of their way to bring you tits and douchebags in this remake.
Yeah.
And there is a lot of tits, too. It's like they have a checklist of what was, like, what made Friday the 13th movies Friday the 13th movies. But I think they followed that. Like, you should have taken that checklist and go, okay, scratch this out. Scratch that out. And these are the things that would work, and let's build on these. I don't know. But all right. Anyways, I'll stop ranting about it. Go ahead.
I think you're right, and I think that I do wonder if, you know, this was filmed in 2009. Well, filmed before that, it was released in 2009. I do wonder if somebody were to take, you know, this series now and try and reboot it. If, you know, they, all right, we kind of need to push this off to the side because it just doesn't fit anymore. Where it was like, you know, this was coming off the back end of the torture porn genre, like that's where like the end of that was kind of concluding, like that era of horror. And I do wonder if maybe like All right. Well, this is kind of like a throwback in, and as you said, maybe in some of the wrong ways, but it's like, let's course correct horror. Like, oh, and they might have over course corrected.
Yeah, I think that the most movie does a brilliant job of honoring the series, but I think that in adhering to all the tropes of the series, it holds it back from being a great horror film. As it is, it's, like, it's pretty good. Like, you and you are both saying, this is scarier in a way that none of the other films were, yeah. except how we remember them as a kid.
Yeah. And I think some of the kills, too, are pretty fucking awesome. Yeah. There's a kill, there's an arrow kill on a boat.
Yes, arrow to the head.
Yeah, and it's pretty awesome. And then the boat hits the girl in the water.
And she goes and hides, like, under the pier, and, like, Jason's, like, standing above her, and he, like, slides the fucking machete between the boards.
Yeah.
And, like, then pulls her up. Like, pulls her up out of the water to pull the fucking machete out of her head. Like
he is smart in this. Like, it's unlike...
That's exactly right there. Then you have the tits as, like, a punchline in that, where it's just like,
yeah,
this is horrifying. Like, if you didn't have keep pointing out, like, how much you're honoring what the series was.
Well, yeah, and anyways. It's like that whole water skiing. Like, there's no reason for her to be topless.
Yeah, like, just exactly. Like, it's just, it may have made sense in the 80s. It doesn't now. Like,
right. And there was no need for it. Like, there is an awful, like, there's more nudity in this than I think in any other Friday the 13th movie.
Yeah, actually. Absolutely.
I just think, like, that there's some really creative kills. I think there's, like, an actual story, and as you said, maybe it's like they just took the story of the first four films and kind of put them all together, and it actually works. Though it's like there's a narrative here, like,
yeah, like, and the guy looking for his sister does give it, like, an emotional core, and they use, yeah, they make it more the center of the story than they did in Final Chapter. And Final Chapter is this thing on the side where you figured out what this guy was doing, like, way late into it. Here, he's, like, a main character, and that's, like, the story of the movie.
Well, and they keep giving us, like, little snippets of the fact that she's alive, right? Like,
yeah. Which, like, I did not remember going into this. I did not remember he kept her as a prisoner, which is another thing I'm like, that's kind of an interesting, like...
Because I think this is something that really makes Jason more terrifying, is that he's human.
Yeah.
Like, he is not... At least in this movie...
He's human.
He's not the zombie. He's not the walking corpse monster that is unstoppable. He can be stopped, but... You know, he is also...
You're on his turf, so you're at a disadvantage. And, yeah. You know, he's...
And he's dangerous.
You don't know he's hunting for you. You're there to have fun. And I just... Like, they went back to what he was in two in a lot of ways. And I love the idea of Jason as this hermit living in the woods who, it like, will hunt you if you come into his territory. And there's even a lady that says early on, like, people around here know where to go. Like, we just don't go by him and he leaves us alone. And it's like, I love that idea. It's like, he's just protecting this little spot, which is always what it's kind of been. He's protecting Crystal Lake. But, like, they fleshed it out just right here. And they, like, hit what this character should be. He shouldn't be a zombie. He shouldn't be a slug that goes between bodies. He should be a guy in the woods that you want to stay away from with his fucking little shack in the woods.
And it's so funny, too, because there's a comparison to draw here between this and Rob Zombie's Halloween. Whereas, like, they have given, and some of this is, you know, it's pulled directly from the previous movies, but they have given Jason, like, a backstory and an understanding that has maybe always been there, but it was given over multiple films, but it makes sense. It's not like this stupid add-on.
Yeah.
Whereas Rob Zombie, like, tacks on a bunch of bullshit. It's like, nobody gives a crap about this. You didn't make Michael Myers more scary.
Yeah.
You just made him stupid. And in this, like, everything that you know, that they do to kind of, like, pay homage to the series works. And it helps to make Jason a more terrifying villain.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the whole, like, end of this movie, too. I think it's, like, first of all, then you find out when you find out he has tunnels that are going beneath everything. I like the way, like, when the final showdown between them, like, when they, like, suck him into the fucking,
The wood chipper.
The wood chipper, yeah. Like, gets his head kind of chopped in the wood chipper. Like, I don't know, dude. I think all around, like, anything with Jason and anything with the horror in this is really strong.
Yeah, anything where they're trying to, like, have character work with basically anybody that's not, you know, the brother or the sister.
Yeah.
It's a little weak. But I think for the most part, like, it really works. It's really, really good. I don't understand that there are – it's weird. Like, I mean, it reviewed terribly. Rotten Tomatoes, I think, has it at 25%. Which is the same as Halloween, done by Rob Zombie, but the viewer ratings on it are lower than Rob Zombie's Halloween, which to me is just mind blowing. Like,
ever since this movie came out, it's been like me and you and Brian that think it's brilliant, and I don't know anyone else that does. Like, it seems like it's commonly trashed as a bad remake, and I'm like, look, dude, I just rewatched all of them, and I have problems with Friday the 13th 2009. It's a strong Friday the 13th film.
Yes.
I don't know. I honestly don't know. I've never seen someone articulate what they don't like about it other than what I just said, which I just came up with on my own. I've never heard someone say that's why they don't like it.
Well, and if...
I don't know why people don't like it.
And I do wonder, like, if you don't like that aspect of it, do you like Friday the 13th? Like, which, yeah. I think it's fine to be like, you know, it doesn't really work in a movie today. And I think, like, you're perfectly justified. But, like, if you don't like what this movie did,
yeah, it is
like the previous Friday the 13th movies.
It's honoring everything that 1 through 4 were and elevating the horror in a big way. Like, that's basically what you're getting here. And I have problems with them. I think that they should have elevated everything. You know, they should have, yeah, like, done away with some of the tropes from the 80s. Like, honestly, though, the first time I saw it in 2009, they did exactly what I wanted them to do, and I loved them for it. It's just with time now, it's 7 years later, I have different opinions about it now, you know what I mean? And
right, and it's you know, there's a way to look at it now and go, they could have, like, they did such a good job, and I just wish they had gone that extra step to really modernize it and really bring it forward, instead of doing, like, the half step, which is, like, they made an awesome Friday the 13th movie in 2009.
Yeah, I hope someone kind of hears what I'm saying here, or, like, some executive somewhere or some writer somewhere has the same kind of thing, and where, like, they got most of it right, but now, like, let's come up with a group of 5 people that you like, and they have, like, their actual characters. Like, I don't know, but
yeah,
as it stands, like, this is pretty high on my list, which. Before we got a few things to do before we wrap up, but
I have made my ranking of 1 to 12, but let's like, is there anything else you wanted to add on?
No, I mean, other than favorite kill and favorite favorite girl.
So what is your favorite kill here?
My favorite kill is a sleeping bag.
Yeah, that's
fine. It's terrifying. Okay. Which is crazy, because I think it's the first one as well in this one. Favorite girl, I can't remember. I didn't write one down, so I don't know.
I wrote down Jenna, who is the she's Trent's girlfriend going in, but she ends up spending most of the movie with Clay.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, she's the one that ends up trying to help Clay and Whitney escape, and she ends up getting killed herself. But
they're all kind of, like, generally good looking in this one too, so it's kind of like,
yeah,
that's kind of where I was just like, whatever, I don't have a favorite, they're all good.
What's your rating?
My rating for a Friday the 13th film, it's a 5.
Okay. I have it at a 4.
All right.
Which means I went the entire series without a without giving a 5. So.
So there is no Friday the 13th movie that is the ultimate Friday the 13th movie.
No, for, you know, for
if we're
me,
grading on that, if we're grading on that curve.
Yeah.
Let's do our rankings real quick. We'll just run it down real quick.
Okay.
Do you have your list ready, or do you want me to?
I do.
Go for it.
Where do you want to start? 12? 12 to 1?
Yeah, 12 to 1.
All right. So I have Freddy vs. Jason at 12. Jason Goes to Hell at 11. Jason Takes Manhattan at 10. Jason Lives at 9.
That hurts.
The New Blood at 8. A New Beginning at 7. Jason X at 6. The Final Chapter at 5. Part 2 at 4. The Original at 3. Part 3 at 2. And the Remake at number 1.
Wow. All right. Some interesting things there, but you know, if you listen to mine closely, I think a few of ours line up strangely. All right, so at 12, I have The New Beginning.
Okay.
At 11, I have Jason Takes Manhattan. At 10, I have Freddy versus Jason. At 9, I have The New Blood. At 8, I have The Original, which I'm sorry, Chris, but
it's okay.
At number 7, I have Jason Goes to Hell. At number 6, I have Jason X. At number 5, I have Jason Lives. At number 4, I have Part 2. At number 3, I have Part 3. At number 2, I have The Remake. And at number 1, I have The Final Chapter.
There you go.
So, everyone who listened to all this, thanks for listening. I don't know how you feel about this, Chris, but it's been fun for me. Yeah, it was kind of bittersweet when I was done. I was like, there's no more. But I'm also like, there's no more.
Yeah, so. On some level, I was like, well, I kind of miss having like two movies to watch every week.
Yeah.
But also, God damn it, that series is long.
And there was points in it where I was like, like when we were in 7 and 8, I'm like, this kind of fucking sucks. But then... Yeah. In the latter half of the series, which I think a lot of them I have not revisited lately, like I had a lot of fun despite them being kind of like bad movies, but like totally entertaining. So
yeah, they're fun. Like even though they're bad, they can be some fun movies.
Where does this fall for you in the big three, Chris? Like Friday the 13th, like between Nightmare and Halloween, where is it?
Right in the middle, I think. I Halloween is still my favorite. And I probably need to sit down and rewatch that entire series, but I think just like for me it comes down to the character. Like the main character, and it's like for me it's Michael, Jason, Freddy all the way, so
my order is the same. I just like Part 1, I think Michael's a better character. I think it's a classier horror film altogether. Like, I think that at least the first Halloween, even compared to the first Friday the 13th, Friday the 13th is a ripoff of it, and it's acknowledged ripoff. Halloween is just, for very basic reasons, ever since I was a little kid, has always been my favorite. So it's never going to change. I know that series inside and out. I could tell you crazy details about Halloween, but I've always really enjoyed Friday the 13th as well. Like, always was, like, easily my number 2, and I had a lot of fun with it, like, growing up on those movies. So it was fun to revisit them all in a row within, like, a month and a half. So
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
We might do some more series in the future, or maybe next year. Maybe the Saw series, just for Chris here. We'll see. But I don't know what we'll have for next week. In fact, I might give us a week off after working so hard through this. But we'll have stuff when we come back.
If we do come back, I will have Jigsaw and the girlfriend. Not the girlfriend, the babysitter.
I've not seen that yet.
Which I liked, so.
I will not have Jigsaw, but yeah, if you're going to have Jigsaw, we'll probably come back next week, and I'll have stuff for sure.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be back next week then.
Movie dudes. Do-do-do-do-do.